got here okay. We're happy to see you all. And we'd like to start today's Unity Day event with the Serenity Prayer in multiple languages. For those of you who have not heard this before, we did this last year. The first time I ever heard it was at the World Service Convention in Philadelphia a few years back. And I hope you get out of it what I had gotten out of it the first time I had heard it.
This is French. Mon Dieu, donnez-moi la sérénité d'accepter les choses que je ne puis changer, le courage de changer les choses que je peux, et la sagesse d'en connaître la différence.
This is going to go a little slower because it's Hebrew. Eli ten li et hashal na, mekabel et hadavarim, she'en bechoti lishanotam. Ometz lishanot et hadavarim, asher bichoti. The et hatvuna lehavchin bein hashnaim.
Japanese. Kami wa watashi wa henko dekinai mono o ukeriru yoni heisai o fuyo suru ni wa yuki ga watashi ga dekiru koto o henko suru ni wachi no chigai o shite imasu. Amen.
This is in Spanish. Dios concedieme la serenidad para aceptar las cosas que no puedo cambiar, el valor para cambiar las cosas que puedo, y la sabiduría para conocer la diferencia.
And this is in Polish. Boże daj mi spokój, aby zaakceptować rzeczy, których nie można zmienić. Odwaga do zmiany rzeczy, których można i mądrość, aby znieść rozanica.
And in Italian, Dio, dammi la serenità di accettare le cose che non posso cambiare, il coraggio di cambiare le cose che posso, e la saggezza per conoscere la differenza. And in Greek, O Theos mou, χώριε την ηρεμία, να δέξει τα πράγματα που δεν μπορεί να αλλάξει, το θάρρος να αλλάξει τα πράγματα που μπορώ και τη σοφία να γνωρίζω τη διαφορά. And if you would all join me in English. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. I'd like to thank our serenity prayers, Carolee in French, Randy in Hebrew, Joe in Polish, Matt in Spanish, and Leanne in Japanese. And if I didn't introduce myself, I'm Kathy, emotional overeater, carbohydrate addict, and your MC for the morning. And
hi, Kathy.
Welcome, everyone. I'd like to ask Barbara to read the 12 steps.
One, we admit we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
I am Jen, I'm a compulsive reader, and I have the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, accepting matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you very much. As I'm heading back to the podium, I will invite anyone who knows a foreign language who would like to join our little troop of multilingual serenity prayers. Please see any of the members that you heard today, and we'll get your contact information and have you join us for next year. At this time, I'm going to just go through a few of the housekeeping kind of things. You know, shut off or set to vibrate your cell phones. Please don't send or receive text messages while you're in workshops or things like along those lines. There is to be no smoking anywhere on the property, not even in your cars. The church, it's a church rule. And they do have security cameras, which they do use, and we like this facility, and we'd like to come back. So we just ask for cooperation in that regard. As far as the restrooms, there are two ladies' rooms immediately behind the reception desk where you came in. So just outside those double doors on your left are two ladies' rooms. And then if you continue straight down the corridor, about halfway down the corridor on your left, you'll see a men's room and a ladies' room, a third ladies' room. So that should help out. We do have beverages available here in the main meeting room. Any donation is graciously accepted. As far as lunch goes, now let's really get down to business. It's 9:30. 9:40, let's talk lunch. You can store your lunch either in your car, it's kind of cold enough for some people, or there is a small kitchen down the corridor on your right. There's a sign on the door that says kitchen. So you can avail yourself of that. In that small kitchen is a microwave if you should need that for your lunch preparation. And you can eat your lunch either here in this main meeting room or in that small kitchen. If you take a chair, put the chair back where you got it from. So that's pretty much all there is about lunch.
The large meeting room.
Excuse me?
The large meeting room.
And in the large meeting room as well. Which is also straight down the hall. Absolutely no admission to the kitchen here in this main meeting room. It's more a safety concern than anything else, you know, so please cooperate with us on that. In an effort to reduce noise both in this room and in the hallway, you know, just be conscious of, you know, other meetings that may be going on that could be meditation meetings, but whatever the workshop is, you know, people are here to for their recovery, and they, you know, it's distracting when you're hearing a lot of commotion going on around you. Especially like with these metal chairs, you'll hear it when we all get up. It's like, you know, and that doesn't lend itself to the spirit of the serenity that we're trying to impart here today. So just be aware of that if you could.
When you go down the hallway to get to the meeting rooms, this on your agenda, this room is considered what you'll see as the main meeting room. Then as you walk down the corridor, straight down the corridor on the left, you'll see signs for Classroom A. The door number literally has number 3 on it, if that's helpful to you at all. But you'll see signs that literally say Classroom A and what the session is going to be and what time that session is going to be. Continuing on down that same corridor, there's only one corridor, so if you get to the end, just turn around and come back. Continuing down that corridor, you'll see signs on the door for Classroom B, which actually has door number 5 on it. And there's also a large room here on your agenda, and that room is, again, down the corridor, but instead of being on your left, it's on your right. It's a very big room, and there's a pre-printed, you know, sign that the church has. They call it the Wesley Hall. And then the only other room on your agenda would be Classroom C, which has door number 7 on it, and that's on the left-hand side of the corridor. So that kind of gives you the logistics of navigating around here. Once the classrooms are filled, there will be a sign posted that literally, you know, says that they're full or do not enter. Please respect that. It's a safety issue as well as, you know, trying to keep the spirit of the serenity, you know, for the people that are in there. You're welcome to sort of workshop hop and kind of, you know, get your feet wet and see, well, maybe this is for me. Doesn't seem like I'd rather go to the other one. But once the sign is on that says it's full, please respect that and don't enter. Appreciate your cooperation in that regard. And then basically, you know, all the decisions that we make today are you know, individually and as a committee are all made for the greater good. So, you know, we're just going to put principles before personalities and look forward to a really wonderful day. What I'd like to do at this time is introduce our keynote speaker. I met Ann at the World Service Business Convention out in Los Angeles, California in August, and I heard her speak there and invited her to come and speak with us today, and she graciously accepted. Ann is from New York, and I think you're going to enjoy her talk. So, Ann?
Good morning. My name is Ann, and I am a very grateful compulsive overeater. And as Kathy said, I'm from New York, and I am a garden variety compulsive person because I'm compulsive about everything, hence why I was here a half an hour early, even though it took me a lot less time than I expected. But I'm really glad to be here. And it's Unity Day, and I'm going to start out with that and then go. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. So what does that mean? What does it mean to us? What does it mean to me personally? What it means to me personally is, even though I'm from New York, I'm getting fed what I need today here in New Jersey. It means that when I was just in Florida soaking up that wonderful warmth and sunshine this week, I went to a meeting. Why? Because I have to bring my program with me wherever I go. And I don't have to worry that wherever I go, program is program. We're all the same. Meetings may be different, their formats may be different, but it's all the same. I can go anywhere, and I've done it in many states, and say, my food is loud, my food is singing and dancing, and people aren't calling the men in the white coats to take me away. They're shaking their heads going, yeah, we get you. We understand. That's what unity's all about. That when I walk in a door, you don't care where I'm from. We don't care where you're from. You could be from the good neighborhood. You could be from the crummy neighborhood. You could be from across the street or across the world. and we welcome each other with the same hugs, the same love, and the same acceptance. That's what unity's all about. We're in this fight together. We're all at different stages of fighting our disease, but we're all doing it one day at a time. So how did I get there? So we talk about sharing our experience, strength, and hope. The Big Book talks about, tells in a general way what we were like, what happened, and where we are now. And that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to start at the beginning. I weighed all of 5 pounds when I was born. And my mother swears it was with the doctor's thumb on the scale. I was barely 18 inches. I was this teeny, teeny, tiny little thing. So how did I get to 337 pounds at my highest recorded weight? Well, food was always a part of...
Could you speak louder, please?
Okay.
Put the microphone right up to your lips.
All right, as they say in Region 6, kiss the mic. That's what we say. See, I am from Region 6. You guys are Region 7. So, see, even that, we're not the same, but we have the same issues. Kiss the mic. So I'll put it right here. Unusual people don't usually tell me they can't hear me because I got a big mouth. But anyway, so how did this little tiny 5-pound baby get up to over 300 pounds? Food was always something. I remember my first food memories, I was probably 5 or 6, and in a ice cream place. And I didn't really care about that, but I wanted the soda. One of my big, big trigger foods. That was more important to me than anything. Fast forward, when I was 10, my dad had his first heart attack. That's when fear entered my life. And fear has been running my life ever since. Fast forward again to 12. Now, food enters my life. I broke my foot, badly. 4 months in a non-walking cast, laying on the couch with my foot elevated, with 4 siblings who would get me anything I wanted. I went from being a normal active kid to one that did nothing and started putting on weight fast. Food at that time told me it was my friend. My nickname for my disease is Friend Food, and right now he's sitting right here on my shoulder trying to tell me that he can solve all my problems. Usually, I can flip him off now and tell him, get lost, you're lying to me. But there are days that he gets really loud. By the time I was in high school, I was about 40, 50 pounds overweight. Went on a diet, lost the weight, and hence the roller coaster began. My dad died when I was a senior in high school. I didn't care about anything. The weight started coming back on. Got pregnant, got married. Yeah, in the wrong order. Gained a lot of weight when I was pregnant. In a marriage that wasn't so great. And so it continued. Dieted, gained, lost, gained, lost, gained, lost, gained, lost. I lost, and I'm a very good dieter. I lost 100 pounds twice, lost 90 pounds 3 times, and I will not discuss how many times I lost 20, 30, 40, 50, on and on. I've probably gained and lost a ton over the years. Problem was, not since I was 16 did I ever get to a goal weight, and something always stopped me. And you know how if you're on a diet, you're on or you're off. I knew how to diet. I'm very good at that. I know how to binge. I'm really good at that. What I didn't know how to do is have a healthy relationship with food. I'm still trying to learn that. Many things throughout the years happened. Good things, bad things. But the dieting was getting harder and harder. The pounds I lost became fewer and fewer. What came back on became more and more. I was miserable. I wouldn't say I was actually depressed, but my life was so hard, and it was getting to the point where it was spiraling out of control. My mother lives with me. She's 88 now. She has Alzheimer's. I am her primary caregiver. And if anybody's on that road, you know how hard that can be. My husband is 14 years older than me, and my husband is not well physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. That's a very difficult thing. I have a mentally ill daughter. Now, I can tell you this story and make it sound like my life is miserable, but the fact is I have a pretty good life. And I always like to end it, and I work for the New York City Department of Education, which in and of itself is... For those of you who are teachers or in education at all, you know it's a stressful, and I work for the city, so God save me. So 4 years ago, my life was spiraling out of control. And as I said, I have a mentally ill daughter, and I was sure they were preparing the bed next to me in the mental hospital. So I went to mental health. And of course, you know, the first thing you do when you go to counselor, they send you to a psychiatrist to get the drugs. That's the one time in my life that I was depressed, was on the medication. So after 5 medications, one of which sent me into a deep depression, they decided I didn't need it. He did offer me surgery, though. He said, diets don't work. Have surgery. And my sick mind goes, woohoo! The magic wand! Luckily for me, and I say thank God, and I mean thank God, I've known for a very long time that I was a compulsive eater. And I knew they could take out my stomach, grind it up, use it to fertilize the flowers, and I would still eat. Because my eating had nothing to do with my stomach. Now, I'm not against surgery. For those of you who are contemplating or have had it, great. It's a wonderful tool. I have many people in program on it. I also know people out of program who've had it, and guess what? Most of them end up gaining back their weight. I have a friend who had it who couldn't eat but a bite of this and a bite of that. She said, you know what the problem is? Ice cream slides right down. It's our heads. And I knew it was my head. So I didn't go that route. But I went back to the counselor, and she said to me, go to OA. I said, no. Because 30-something years ago, I went to a meeting, and it was a really negative experience for me. I won't tell you that they chased after us when my friend and I left and told us we hadn't given enough money, but yeah. So when she said, go to OA, I said, I don't want anything to do with those people. But luckily for me, she twisted my arm until I agreed to say yes. And having an overly developed sense of responsibility, if I say yes, I do it. Because she didn't tell me anything. She just said, go to OA. Not where, when, how, why, anything. Just go. So I said I'd do it. I went online. I found a meeting list. And I looked at the meeting list to find a meeting. Now, most people would look for something close to home. I went this way. Saturday morning. Are they crazy? I'm sleeping on Saturday morning. I'm not getting up to 10 o'clock. Sunday morning. Sorry, I just told you I'm sleeping. Let's go through the list. Oh, Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. Man, do you know what time I'll get home by the time that's over? Don't they know I get up? It's 5:45. Finally, I found one. Monday, 6 o'clock. Okay, at least I'll get home at a decent hour. Because my plan was to go to the meeting, hate it, and go back to tell the therapist, at least I tried. That was my plan. Now, this was in an area where, not the nicest area in Queens, so maybe I wasn't real thrilled to be going there, but I was going to go and be done with it. So I get a little early, sitting there in my car, looking at this really scary-looking, ugly building, thinking, I don't see anybody going in. I'm not going in there. I don't see anybody going in. So, okay. I made a deal with God. All right, God. If I don't see anybody go in there in the next 5 minutes, I'm out of here. Now, I don't know about your God, but my God has a sense of humor. Because no sooner did those words get out of my mouth than somebody walked in the door. So I'm like, thanks a lot. Got out of my car, locked the door, tried the handle, locked it again. Because like I said, it wasn't the greatest neighborhood. And walked in to the ugliest room in OA. However, it's also filled with more love than one could ever imagine. I walked in and somebody walked up to me and said, "Are you new?" I said, "Uh-huh." "Well, welcome." And she gave me a hug. "Have a seat." And I sat down. And they read this thing called Just for Today. Just for today? I only have to do this one day? Hell, I can do anything for a day. I've been on every diet known to man. Okay. Then they read, "Welcome home." And as they're reading it, I'm thinking, how do these people know how I live? Because I knew that I was the only person on the face of the earth who acted around food the way I did. So how did these people know? How did these people know that my car was a rolling supermarket and that it was probably a miracle that I'd never killed myself reaching for that package that's great? Yeah. How did these people know that I would tiptoe to the door, look out my peephole, and tiptoe away without ever opening it because I didn't want to see you? How did these people know I sometimes felt like the homeless orphan without a place to really belong? And it was amazing. I didn't really get it, didn't know what was going on, but there was something going on in that room that I wanted. So at the end of the meeting, they said, "We're having a business meeting. Would you like to stay?" Hadn't a clue what they were talking about. But I could be with them a few more minutes. I said, okay. Then they said, "Next week's our anniversary. Would you like to bring something?" And I'm thinking, I don't know what they're talking about. But they want me to do something, I'll say yes. I am a service junkie. And I think it's because I was introduced to service at that very first meeting. My first service was to bring some Splenda for the anniversary meeting. But I have done service on every level, from that little nothing up to going to world service. And whatever I do, I get way more than anything that I do. So I left that meeting, still not quite sure. Still not sure I wanted to be part of it, because I didn't like OA. But there was something there that I needed. I needed the friends, I needed the love, I needed the hugs. Because as I say, I live with a sick mother and a sick husband, and I don't get a whole lot of hugs at home. And my kids all live far away, one in Buffalo, one in California, and one in Florida. So I need my hugs. So they said, okay, I have to figure out what abstinence is. Now, understanding that I didn't want to be there, I'm going to make something easy. So my first definition of abstinence was 3 meals, 2 snacks, and anything goes. The scary thing is I started losing weight, even on anything goes. Because before that, I was, you know, eating 24/7 and anything goes. And I started feeling better. Now, I was blessed with abstinence, such as it was, from that first day. It's not what some people call perfect abstinence. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm far from perfect. Right now, I'm struggling with food. It's singing, dancing. So my food sings, dances, puts on Broadway shows. And sometimes those Broadway shows start winning Tonys. But it's okay. So I started there. Now I'm smart enough to know that 3 meals, 2 snacks, and anything goes is not going to work forever. So I did what always suggests, and I went to a nutritionist. the wrong nutritionist. I knew it was the wrong one when she told me that breakfast should be powdered protein shakes. No. Wasn't going to work for me because I didn't want to diet. I'd been that route. I've done the powders, the shakes, the pills, the eat only this, eat only that. You know, been there, done that. If you've been on a diet, tell me about it and I'll tell you my experience with it because I've probably been there. I wanted to know how to eat. I wanted to eat, know how to eat like a normal, healthy person. So I went to a commercial plan. Only because I knew, had been on it twice before. I knew it worked as a diet, but I also knew that they might teach me how to eat like a normal person. How to eat healthy. Because I knew how to binge and I knew how to diet. I didn't know how to eat healthy. And that's what I'm learning. It's not what I've learned. I'm still trying to learn. Because I still don't have a great relationship with food. You know, it still is my go-to default mechanism. My first thought in times of trouble is eat. But I'm learning before eating. Now my first thing is, my husband was in the hospital. He was very sick a couple of years ago. And when they kicked me out of the emergency room so they could intubate him, I went and called my sponsor. Because that's what I do now. I'm not a good phone call person. It's really my weakness, my weakest tool. But I know if the shit's hitting the fan, I need to call my sponsor. When I found out my sister had lung cancer, it was 10 o'clock at night. It killed me. I couldn't call my sponsor till the next morning. She said I could have, but I'm not going to bother people at that hour. It's not like she could have cured my sister. The miracle of this program, as I said, I'm very close to my sister. She lives here in New Jersey. And when she got lung cancer, I thought I would die. And I went to my meeting that next morning, my home meeting in that ugliest room in LA. And I sat there and I knew I couldn't share. I couldn't open my mouth because I knew if I opened my mouth, I'd lose it. Because we weren't telling my mother yet. So at home I could barely speak of it. My husband's an only child, really can't begin to understand the fear that you could lose your baby sister. And I sat in that meeting and I just sat there. And I guess it was all over my face because I was in a mess. And the speaker looked at me and said, "All right, Ann, spill it." Well, I opened my mouth and just every bit of despair came out of me. And that woman got up out of the chair, came to me, and held me like a baby as the rest of the people at that meeting gathered around me and supported me. You guys carried me through not knowing whether my sister would be alive in a few months. And I say you guys because that's what unity is all about. You know, I can share this story anywhere and know that someone's going to say, "I understand." Praise God, my sister's doing very well right now. And, you know, we hold on to that. And it's one day at a time. The miracle is because of the support of this fellowship. Not only did I reach my goal weight during that time, I didn't gain any weight. I actually lost those last few pounds. And I have been maintaining a 180-pound weight loss for about 15 months now. Thank you for cheering for God, because it's not me. If it was me, it would have happened 40 years ago. One of the millions of other diets would have worked. So what's the difference? Okay, that's where I was. So now what happened? Well, the difference is when I went into that meeting, they told me, basically, "You're not God." I'm not? I don't have to run everything? See, I thought I had to run my life. My kid's life, my husband, my mother, my sister, you know, my family, my job, I had to do it all. If I didn't run it, who would? Bottom line is, I can't handle my own life, much less anybody else's. And the funny thing is, I'd given my daughter to God a long time ago. As I said, she's mentally ill. And I gave her to God the day the hospital that she was locked up in against her will said, she's an adult, she can make her own decisions. Not exactly. I was helpless. I was powerless. So I gave her to God. It was many, many, many more years before I found out, oh, I can give me to God. He can run my mess. And he does. As long as I let him. See, when things are getting bad, and I'm feeling stressed and upset, it's only because I'm not giving it to him. I get sticky fingers. I say, here, God, you can take this. But then I go, well, maybe I ought to handle that one. Well, I don't handle it well. I think food's going to handle it. Friend Food sits here and tells me, go ahead, have a cookie. That'll make you feel better. No, it won't. It'll make me feel worse. The one thing I learned from my sister being sick is God will get me through it, no matter what it is. I don't have to like it. See, because God's got a plan. I don't know it. He doesn't see fit to run them by me first. But that's okay. Because if I went only with what I thought was right, my life wouldn't be what it is right now. And as I said earlier, I work for the New York City Department of Education. Last year I worked as a third, fourth, fifth grade social studies teacher, my least favorite subject, in the school from hell. And I hated it. I was counting the days till I'd be old enough to retire, even though it would mean taking a job while retired to make ends meet. I just wanted out. And in June, I was excessed, which basically means I'll have a job, but who knows where or what. And I said, well, this isn't so bad. The worst that can happen is to send me back to the same school in the same position. So I spent my summer going through the motions. But I had made a decision that I was going to get out of God's way. God had a plan for me. I don't know what it is. I don't have to know. Now I know that his plan actually started 4 or 5 years ago when I was working in a school and I requested a medical transfer because I was working on the fourth floor and at 300 plus pounds, my knees, my back, I was a mess. And I wanted to get to a school that had an elevator so I didn't have to do this. It took nearly 4 years for them to give me the transfer. But when I, that's Department of Education for you. When I got to last year, last September, when they said, show up at this office, we'll give you a placement, they said, oh, this isn't a medical transfer, it's a hardship transfer. That's how I got to the school from hell. On the fifth floor. Yeah. And I said, God, what are you doing to me? And I said, let me just get through the year, because I can look for another job. Then I got excessed. Went through the motions. Didn't find anything because I only wanted, I currently teach in the Bronx, and I live in Queens, which means I have to go over the bridge every day. And I really wanted to be in Queens, so I didn't have to do that. Nothing happened over the summer. They put me in a school, temporary placement, and I had to go on mandatory interviews and mandatory job fairs. So they sent me on this one mandatory interview. And when I was the third of three people being interviewed that day, and the principal looked at me and said, I'm so sorry they didn't tell you what this position is. I have one position and one position only. It's physical education. My reaction exactly, I laughed in her face, because not only, because I still see myself as the fat old lady, not only was I the fat old lady, I have never taken a gym class. Because I broke my foot, as I told you, when I was 12. So that was junior high. high school, I was taking it, and they wanted me to do stuff that I was physically incapable of because of that foot. So the next 4 years, I had a doctor's note, get me out of gym. Then I went to college, and they said, of course you have to take gym. I took volleyball, broke my finger, and never took another gym course again. So here I am, 58 years old, having never taken, and I'm being interviewed for a position as gym teacher. And I said to him, well, that's about as far from my expertise as you can get. I said, my education is elementary ed with a specialty in teaching math. She goes, but you're Common Branch, you can teach anything. Okay, sure I can. She goes, do me a favor, just walk around my school, see what it's like. I'm not going with you, I want you to get the real flavor, and then come back. So I said, good, I don't have to go back to work. I'll wander around for a while. Wasn't taking this job. So I walked around and I thought, this is a nice school. Not too nice, you know, where you wonder what's going to happen. Because that's the one I was temporary placed in, was a nice school, but, you know, you couldn't step out of line at all. It was a little scary to be there. Real kids, they were obnoxious kids. You could see that right off. But mostly they were nice kids. Doing what kids do. I said, and something said to me, say yes. Are you nuts? Bad knees, bad back, bad neck. I don't know anything about gym. I don't even know the games. Say yes. If I've learned one thing, it's when God tells me to do something, I say yes. So I walked back to the principal and I said to her, if you don't care that I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm willing to learn. If you offer me the position, I'll take it. And she offered me the position. Well, if God doesn't have a sense of humor, I don't know what is. I have never in my life been happier in my job. I love this job. I am now getting paid to go to the gym. I am now getting paid to play with kids. I have to make up all the games because I don't really know any real ones because I never went to gym. We're having a blast. They asked me to do an after-school program. I said I can't work on Mondays after school because that's my home meeting in that ugliest room in L.A. And not even for the money would I give that up. She goes, okay, just do it on Tuesday and Wednesday. Cool, okay. So I'm now getting paid extra to play, to run, to jump, to keep this body in shape. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. The promises, they really do come true. I am a walking, talking miracle. If you don't think it could happen, believe me, it can happen to you. It's all about giving it to God. The miracle can happen. The promises do come true because God is doing for me what I could never do for myself. And I appreciate you letting me speak to you because God, not only, one of his little tricks he uses is he makes things come out of my mouth that are meant for my ears. Because I can be thick-headed and unwilling, but he keeps coming back. And he says to me very often, can you hear me now? And he'll say it as many times until finally I say, okay, you're in charge. Thy will, not mine, be done. Thanks for letting me share.